Welcome to Fresh Take, where we at Florida Organic Growers speak to food systems experts about topics related to organic and sustainable agriculture, healthy lifestyles, and the environment. To help us continue our programs at FOG, including our podcast, consider becoming a sponsor. For more information on sponsorship, check out our Get Involved page on our website, www.foginfo.org.
Hello, and welcome to Fresh Take. In today's episode, we turn our attention to the agricultural practice of pre-harvest sugar field burning and its impacts on local communities. Joining us to speak about this topic is Patrick Ferguson, the campaign's senior organizing representative who is helping to lead this grassroots activism and shed light on this regional issue. Together, we'll uncover the impacts, advocacy efforts, and solutions that currently exist to address sugar field burning. Welcome to the show, Patrick.
Thank you. Pleasure to be here. Thanks for having me.
We're thrilled to have you, and we have so much to talk about today, and I'm ready to be inspired again by the power of community-driven movements and their fight for a sustainable future. Now, I have known you for a few years, but it would be great to hear more about your background and if you can share a little bit with our audience about your journey that brought you to this role today.
Sure. I'd be happy to. Yeah, my personal background, I am an attorney. I went to law school at Nova Southeastern University. And shortly after graduating law school, I found myself slowly but surely, you know, feeling unfulfilled as far as, you know, my desire to make a positive impact through my, you know, chosen profession. And I started to get more and more involved into local activism. Always had a passion for justice and a passion for the environment for as long as I remember. And with that, I've always had a fighting spirit, that's for sure. So, you know, certainly that had driven me to pursue first a career in law and then, you know, find myself in the position as a campaign organizer for the Sierra Club on this, you know, very inspiring work with the Stop the Burn, Go Green campaign.
Yeah, and this is, you know, really tough, deeply rooted work. And I feel that many people would have turned to another job that didn't involve as much effort. But props to you for taking this on and transpiring your background in law into food justice work. This is a really niche area that I feel a lot of folks are maybe unfamiliar with and don't know a lot about, because we often think of food as something that we just eat every day, but there are a lot of different layers to our food system. And I'm curious to know what inspired you to go into this field of food justice work.
Yeah. So, you know, shortly after I graduated law school, I had been inspired just by the state of climate change, what I had noticed, you know, as far as impacts of sea level rise on my beloved beaches, hurricanes getting worse. And this was all happening at a time when Rick Scott was governor was banning government officials from using the word climate change. You know, I really started feeling more and more activated and wanting to get involved in fighting and advocating for solutions to climate change. So that led me to start and organize a climate march to Fort Lauderdale, where I lived back in 2015. And at the time, I had invited one of my former law professors to be a speaker. And in speaking to him, that I was growing a little bit, you know, disillusioned with, you know, the traditional legal career I was getting underway with, he had recommended that I look into a job opening with the Sierra Club, which one of the open positions was the Stop the Burn, Go Green campaign. And interestingly enough, I had prior experience with the Glades communities. Back in high school, I played football and we were in the same district as Glade Central, which is located in El Glade. You know, for folks who follow Florida football, Glade Central in particular is a legendary football powerhouse. But I had had experience going to the Glades communities. The interactions I had with folks were always very positive. They beat us on the football field, but treat us to a great barbecue afterwards. And when I had learned about the negative impacts that pre-harvest sugar field burning was causing them, you know, that really inspired me that this is a position that is good for me. And I've always been a proponent of the JFK quote, everybody can make a difference and everyone should try. You know, really, I just felt that this is a good place for me to, you know, to try to channel, you know, my passions and my efforts to doing some good. So now that's just kind of an overview of how I got into this work.
That's wonderful. I love that you connected from, you know, your roots growing up, playing football and working with those communities. And it's not often that you hear people kind of go back to the areas that they grew up in terms of addressing some issues that exist in those regions. So that's very admirable that you decided to take that route. And I wanted to transition here into the actual Stop the Burn, Go Green campaign. Can you tell us a little bit about what the campaign is actually focused on and the key regions that it affects in the state of Florida?
Yes. So a short summary is that the Stop the Burn, Go Green campaign is a grassroots-led environmental justice movement that is pushing the sugar industry to stop the outdated, toxic, and unnecessary practice of pre-harvest sugar field burning and modernize by fully implementing the sustainable burn-free practice of green harvesting. So for folks that aren't aware of the issue of pre-harvest sugar field burning, every year, beginning in October and lasting through May, on a near daily basis during the harvesting season, the sugar industry will burn fields that are ready for harvest to remove the outer leaves and tops to collect the sugar-bearing stock for processing back at the mills. The practice of burning the outer leaves and tops goes back to the era when sugarcane was cut manually. It was made a lot easier to burn off those tops beforehand to cut the cane and take it back for harvesting. And it also worked to remove, you know, various pests and snakes and such from the field to make it safer for the cane growers to come in. But flash forward to an era when modern mechanical harvesters do all of the harvesting. The practice is maintained as a way to cut costs and make for quicker and cheaper harvesting season on the whole. And geographically, sugarcane is grown predominantly within the Everglades agricultural area of Florida, which borders Lake Okeechobee. So you get sugarcane in Palm Beach County, Hendry County, Glades County, Islands County, a little bit in Okeechobee County. So basically all the counties that border Lake Okeechobee, but the vast majority of the acreage, roughly 75%, is wrapped around Glades communities of Western Palm Beach County, which include Belgrade, South Bay, and Pahokee, which is also referred to as Muck City. So these are the areas that are, you know, most heavily impacted by this practice on an annual basis.
Was there a moment that made it clear that this campaign was needed to address this issue? Like just something that sparked for this to happen, for this campaign to get started?
Sure. So historically speaking, for the environmental movement folks who live in areas that were impacted by sugarcane burning, it had always been a concern, but things really, you know, didn't take off per se until 2015, when the Sierra Club Florida chapter, after years of this kind of being a back burner issue, really decided to take it on by filing a petition with the EPA, trying to hold the sugar industry to account for the pollution produced by pre-harvest sugar field burning that was escaping all, you know, required pollution reporting requirements to the EPA. But in addition to that announcement, Sierra Club Florida chapter announced a campaign to help spread public awareness of the issue. And at that point, there was a phone call made from the sitting mayor of South Bay, at the time located within the Glades communities, who had heard about the initiative. Ironically enough, from representatives of the sugar industry that did a presentation for the local city commission, basically telling them to watch out for the Sierra Club and don't listen to their misinformation about sugarcane burning. But she herself, in partnership with, you know, several other concerned citizens, had already begun to talk about the issue and draw connections to a lot of the health issues they had noticed that were impacting their friends and their families. And so when the mayor at the time heard about this campaign, she right away did the opposite of what the sugar industry was hoping they'd achieve with that presentation, and called up the Sierra Club, which led to an initial meeting that, you know, from there just started with a group of a few concerned citizens, has transformed into this very compelling and powerful grassroots led campaign that's been growing ever since, which at its core is led by representatives of communities who are directly impacted by this practice.
Right. And it's so incredible. I mean, this topic is so interesting to me because I've been a Florida resident for over 20 years, and this is something that I had not even heard of being on the East Coast of the state until just a few years ago when someone introduced me to you. And I feel that the Everglades especially is such a critical area, such a critical region in the state in terms of, you know, being a nature's oasis. And we often don't realize it living in the state, some of us that are not close to the Everglades, that it's a pretty significant piece of our land. And this specific issue is, you know, impacting so many communities nearby. And it's inspiring to hear how community leaders have really been involved in this and taken it to a whole other level. So I'm curious to hear, what has been your experience with working with some of the community residents and hearing some of their stories? How has that impacted you in your role as the organizing representative?
Well, it's certainly inspired me to keep going with what has obviously been a very challenging campaign, but very rewarding, especially seeing all the progress this campaign has made over the years. But I think you hit the nail on the head as to what was one of the biggest challenges to start with, is that this was a very localized issue that, you know, the wider public was not aware of in a necessary manner to generate the needed public pressure to lead towards our campaign's solution. And likewise, within the community itself, few people were aware that it was even possible to harvest sugarcane without burning it, because it's just been such an ingrained part of life for decades within the region. So public awareness, public education was certainly instrumental to start with to begin to tackle this issue. And one of the things that has been, you know, particularly compelling and inspiring, and the more that public has been made aware of what these community leaders have been up against, we're talking about a classic David versus Goliath conflict, in that these communities, the Glades communities, are very much a company town. The sugar industry, who, for folks who've been following Florida politics, will be very aware that they have significant political influence. Mm-hmm. Not just within Florida, but on a national level too. So you can imagine how much that is amplified locally within the Glades communities, where you're hard pressed not to find any, you know, local organization, church group, certainly local politicians that don't have some kind of financial entanglements within the industry. And on an individual level, several folks within their families, you know, folks work within the industry. And it's been considered very taboo to speak out against the industry within these communities. But the folks that make up our campaign, these are pastors, these are, you know, former elected officials, teachers, students, folks who work in healthcare. These are folks who really care about their community and really feel, rightfully so, that their communities deserve better from this multi-billion dollar industry, to whom, you know, the local labor of residents within the Glades has helped build that wealth. Yet it's a situation where, you know, these folks have to bear all the health impacts, quality of life impacts from living in a community where it rains down black snow 8 months out of the year. So very early on, as folks within the community started to speak out, there was a significant effort by the industry through the use of various front groups, etc., to spread a lot of fear and propaganda that, you know, everybody talking about, everybody affiliated with the campaign, you know, speaking about green harvesting, it's really just all about putting the industry out of business and taking away your jobs. So they've created that classic false dichotomy of jobs versus health, jobs versus environment. And folks who have really been on the front lines, you know, representing this campaign have had to deal with that kind of pushback. And, you know, there's been a lot of harassment, threats to folks' jobs, a lot of things that, you know, I've seen personally that, you know, they're willing to endure because of their passion for justice. And that really inspires me. And that, you know, compelling narrative and hearing their testimonies has what's led all the momentum and growth that this campaign has seen thus far.
Yeah, and I feel like the display of courageous advocacy has been so significant from all of the folks involved with this. And you mentioned the health impacts, and I want to just clarify to everyone listening that the black snow that you refer to is the ash residue that pretty much falls from the sky during and after the burning takes place. And you've mentioned several health impacts, and particularly it's been a big impact on respiratory health and has been connected to some other diseases such as cancer. So how else have you seen it impact the health of the community, and what has been done in order to address that?
Sure. So first and foremost, you're hard pressed, you know, not to have any event and any, you know, conversation with a large group of individuals where, you know, you ask, do you yourself or anybody in your family suffer from respiratory issues like asthma? You find out how prevalent it is. But one of the more unfortunate aspects is a common story I hear is that folks are told by their doctors that the best long-term solution for their reoccurring respiratory ailments is to move to another community with better year-round air quality. There's certainly not something that folks should have to do, or would they have the resources to do at all.
Right.
And these are folks that love their community. So, you know, it goes back to the core of the campaign that, you know, especially considering this is unnecessary practice and looking into the actual health impacts that have really been underlined by an FSU study that came out last August. They'd estimated that between 1 to 6 people die each year from exposure to sugarcane burning pollution, with the mortality risk level as much as 10 times higher for folks who live closest to the sugarcane burning.
Wow.
Which is just, it really puts things into perspective. And there's been several other, you know, studies over the years and underway currently outlining the overall pollution impacts, you know, everything from particulate matter, 2.5 pollution, carcinogenic polycyclic aromatic hydrocarbons, benzene, formaldehyde. You know, when you have the, you build these relationships and, you know, you talk to folks that are concerned about their, you know, their kids who suffer from asthma, you know, not wanting to let them go outside and play on days when it's real bad. You hear about an elementary school that had to be evacuated with kids rushed to the hospital when a nearby burn, you know, seeped through the ventilation system.
Wow.
And, you know, you constantly hear anecdotes like this, you know, not to mention the fact that they say, hey, every month during the harvesting season, you got to change your AC filters just to keep up with the ash buildup.
Mm.
And, you know, outside of the health impacts, you've got the economic impacts. I have an office there, so I've been able to see it firsthand. There's no escaping the ash and soot. And, you know, folks have to foot the bill for the constant cleanup. And they use the analogy, it's like living next door to a neighbor who dumps trash on your lawn and leaves you with the bill to clean it up.
Right. And it seems that there's definitely a social justice issue here too, because the communities that live in this area are predominantly communities of color. And it seems that, you know, this is an ongoing trend as far as folks that are living in certain areas of a state that end up with different disparities that they face, whether it's living in a food desert, being placed by a factory, and, you know, just having these unfortunate, you know, disadvantages that they have to face in living in those regions. So, you know, there's so many different layers to this topic, and it's something that is just so pressing to me that, you know, we have to address this as soon as possible. And one of the good things that has come out of this campaign is obviously the advocacy efforts for green harvesting and understanding that there are alternative practices to sugarcane burning. So I'd love to hear from you more about what the green harvesting method looks like. What does that involve? And how has this been proven successful?
Yes. So first and foremost, green harvesting is simply using the modern mechanical harvesters, which the Florida industry already uses, that are equipped to mechanically separate outer leaves and tops from the sugar-bearing cane billets. And it's just a matter of modulating the refractor fan speeds and slowing down the harvesters a little bit. And so what we've seen is that this practice has been successfully implemented all over the world. And in particular, in the nation of Brazil, this is the world's largest sugarcane growing nation that by law and in partnership with the industry has phased out pre-harvest burning in favor of green harvesting. And they've not just only recognized the benefits to public health, environmental health as a result, but they've economically benefited. In that when you green harvest, those leaves and tops could end up being used as natural fertilizer. They can recycle nutrients back into the earth. That same trash can be utilized to generate more electricity at the mills, create more biofuels, biochar, etc. Where we've seen green harvesting being implemented, you know, we've seen that these farmers, you know, have been able to generate new sources of revenue. Overall, it's just a matter of, you know, investing in that initial transition. I should note, we point to green harvesting taking place in Australia, Belize, Zimbabwe, Africa, India, Thailand. Basically, and another important thing to take into consideration is that anywhere organic sugarcane is grown, per USD organic certifications, has to be green harvested. A more important point to make, too, in addition to all these international examples, is that we know that the Florida sugar industry does regularly implement green harvesting, such as when weather conditions prevent a burn permit from being approved. They'll just go ahead and green harvest. Then Florida Crystals grows organic acreage, which is not burnt. And we found out by going on a tour provided by U.S. Sugar, when we asked about green harvesting, is that they green harvest the fields surrounding a Walmart in Clewiston. And when we asked why they did this, they said it's done as a courtesy to the residents of Clewiston. Fundamentally, that's what this campaign is all about, to extend that same courtesy to all residents impacted by this practice.
Yeah, I think that it speaks for itself that green harvesting practices have proven successful in other countries that you just mentioned. And the fact that we have the resources to do that in the state, we have had, you just mentioned, Florida Crystals do it themselves. And there definitely are places where, you know, the transitioning is available to do that. So I feel that there are definitely folks out there who don't even know, you know, that this is a possibility, an alternative to sugarcane burning, especially the folks that are not involved in sugarcane in terms of agriculture. But I want to kind of explore more the alternative uses that you mentioned for the sugarcane plant that is typically burned, what are some of the other uses that we find for those different aspects, different parts of the plant that are typically wasted?
Sure. So a big one we've seen is where green harvesting is practiced, especially in Brazil, that they've been able to more than double the electricity output back at the mill by bringing the leaves and tops back to be burnt with the other byproduct at the end of the sugar processing pipeline, which is called bagasse. And ethanol is a major biofuel that can be utilized as well from incorporating the sugarcane trash. Biochar, which can be used as organic fertilizer and can be used as a cleaner alternative towards generating electricity versus burning coal or burning wood, is utilized through sugarcane trash. In fact, there's a company in Louisiana that is currently utilizing sugarcane trash to do so. And we'd love to see that happen in Florida too. But one particularly impressive example is I got a chance to go down to Brazil in 2019 in the state of São Paulo and tour what's called the Green Cane Project. This is one of the largest organic regenerative agricultural operations of its kind. Produces one third of the world's organic sugarcane supply. And they view it's the saying, one man's trash is another man's treasure. They view the sugarcane trash as a vital part of their operation, especially in utilizing it as mulch to return nutrients to the soil, to help us sequester increased carbon to fight climate change. And they've also found that this overall harvesting method and incorporating the trash, has improved soil health to the point they've seen an increase in overall biodiversity as compared to other regional national parks within São Paulo.
That's incredible.
It's really impressive stuff. I'd love to share more information about it. I know we have limited time. The whole idea of the Green Cane Project is first and foremost, you focus on the health of the soil, and then healthy crops and everything else, comes secondary. And getting to see that firsthand, really inspired me to want to come back and spread information that sugarcane can be grown in tandem with nature in a beneficial and harmonious manner. And I feel like that is lost so much in the debate, because of all the pollution practices associated with sugarcane that, the general consensus is it's just a polluting crop to deal with in the first place. But it really can, be done in a sustainable, beneficial manner. And being able to see that and see all the issues that we have in Florida, especially the very sensitive Everglades ecosystem overall, and that the overall benefits that a Green Cane Project can bring to Florida is another, important factor of the public education of this campaign. Speaking of climate change, there's also a company out there called Crops Carbon Harvest that take plant waste and uses it for deep sea ocean sequestration, to permanently sequester carbon in the ocean while at the same time creating ocean floor habitats for sea life, which is a very interesting, and beneficial use. What na right now a plant product that's just being burned to create, such awful pollution and harm in local communities. And in talking about all these other alternatives, it's very important to underline that, a true commitment to a transition to green harvesting also means increased economic opportunity and job opportunities that are, poorly, just very much needed, within the Glades communities. So you're really talking about a win-win-win overall. And when you really tie it together and you look to you mentioned the environmental justice aspects of this campaign, the regulations in place based off wind direction and speed are designed to prioritize protecting more affluent whiter communities in central and eastern Palm Beach County. And as an effect of that, when the winds are projected to blow the smoke and ash towards the predominantly black and brown Glades communities, lower income communities, there's minimal protections put in place. So you have this situation, which is just, you know, a gross example of environmental racism in action. And you have all the growing evidence of the health impacts. You know, we didn't get a chance to get into this, but, you know, what goes up must come down. And through atmospheric deposition, this pollution is getting into the nearby waterways and contributing to, you know, the overall algal blooms and water quality crisis we have here in Florida. And you have such a low-hanging fruit, win-win-win situation that can have so many downstream positive impacts. It's why it's so important to spread awareness about this. And, you know, because of the momentum that, you know, has been building, especially within these last 2 years, there's now opportunities at a federal level, particularly within the Farm Bill that's up for renegotiations, for sugarcane burning to be addressed. And our desire is, and our hope, and what we are fighting for is that there can be resources put in place that if the industry is going to continue to get all the benefits they receive within the federal sugar program, which is a topic for a whole nother podcast, that at the very least they implement, you know, the most modern sustainable harvesting practices. And it's a shame that we see all these other countries around the world benefiting from it. You know, the industry has been obstinate in, you know, trying to recklessly pursue short-term profits at such, you know, harmful expenses on the public and environment, that this outdated practice has been allowed to, you know, not just allowed, but protected and maintained in our rich country that has all the resources to make this work. So if there's any takeaway for folks from listening to this podcast, you know, I hope you go to stopsugarburning.org and learn more. There's several different calls of actions that we have there. But also bear in mind, as a consumer, if you purchase organic sugarcane, you're sending a message, you know, to the industry that, you know, green harvested sugarcane is in demand. And that's, you know, another small way to help. But I encourage folks to really, you know, spread awareness about this issue, get involved. You know, there's too much at stake with, you know, you're talking about the issues with Everglades restoration, environmental issues, climate change, and all of, you know, the horrible impacts and disparities, you know, from this practice that's being disproportionately borne in these communities, that, you know, we all need to be behind this. Power concedes nothing without demand. So, you know, the more folks weighing in on this and, you know, demanding environmental justice, demanding green harvesting, the better.
Absolutely. I mean, you touched on so many different things, Patrick, from the innovative upcycling methods that exist in reusing some of the parts of the plant that typically go to waste, to some of the things that we don't really think about often is the job opportunities, the economic outcomes that can come out of this as well. And the impacts even on our oceans. As a peninsular state, we have definitely a big role to play in that. So as we conclude this episode, you know, and reflect on the remarkable efforts of the Stop the Burn campaign and number of solutions that exist, I want to highlight the strength of grassroots activism and the unwavering dedication of people on the ground, including yourself, Patrick. Your work is really critical, and I admire what you do. So thank you for sharing this information with us and talking about much needed change.
Thank you so much, Lana. Pleasure to be able to speak about this today.
And I prompt everyone listening to carry forward the stories and lessons shared today, embracing the collective responsibility to protect our communities and forge a sustainable path forward. Together, we can truly create a future where burning sugarcane fields become a distant memory. Thank you for joining us on this episode. And until next time, keep advocating for a better world.
We hope you enjoyed today's episode. Florida Organic Growers is a 501c3 nonprofit organization. So to keep our content available and free to the public, we need your help. Please subscribe, rate, and review wherever you listen, and consider making a tax-deductible donation or become a sponsor. Learn more about our work and how you can become a sponsor from our website, www.foginfo.org.